Welcome to AM Best Audio.
Driven by an unusually active first half of U.S. natural catastrophe events, global insured losses surged to $84 billion in the first half of 2025, the highest mid-year total since 2011, according to Gallagher Re. With 13 of the $14 billion insured loss events occurring in the U.S., largely from wildfires and severe convective storms, the findings underscore escalating climate volatility and raise pressing concerns for the insurance industry around reinsurance capacity, pricing pressure, and readiness heading into peak hurricane season. I'm Lori Chortis for AM Best Audio. Joining us now to discuss that and other findings from the report is Steve Bowen. He's Gallagher Re's Chief Science Officer and one of the lead authors of the report. Steve, welcome. So great to speak with you today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Steve, how is the high concentration of insured catastrophe losses in the U.S. shaping global reinsurance strategies and capital allocation for the remainder of this year?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think we have to take a step back and just recognize that the U.S. typically is a significant, if not the main driver of annual insured catastrophe losses. And so while the first half of the year was certainly an anomaly, if we're looking solely at weather and climate events, it was actually the most expensive first half of the year on record. 2011, of course, was linked back to the Tohoku earthquake in Japan and earthquake activity in New Zealand. So the fact that these events occurred in the U.S. and they were so expensive was not necessarily such a massive surprise, because the U.S. market has generally gone through significant cycles of these types of either aggregated large losses from severe convective storms or other perils, or individual large losses typically coming from hurricanes. Though we should continue to talk about earthquake, right? It's one of those perils that tends to be out of sight, out of mind. But we know that risk is always simmering, and we certainly need to be continuing to prepare. So with all of that context, I do think that it is safe to say that reinsurers and insurers collectively understand the U.S. market quite well. They are getting much more, I would say, sophisticated in terms of how they are viewing risk and understanding risk and trying to take those lessons learned into their underwriting practices. And when it comes to more global pricing, I mean, typically the regions respond to what the regional loss performance looks like. So obviously what happens in the U.S. can have an effect on these negotiations at the various renewal cycles. But we have, knock on wood, seen a relatively quiet or very manageable, a couple of years outside the U.S. when it comes to catastrophe losses. And that has, in fact, resulted in some continued price softening in many areas of the world.
Steve, this year marks the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. What lessons can insurers draw from the past two decades as the industry prepares for a potentially active hurricane season?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe it's been 20 years already, right? But the reality is that many of the lessons that were learned 20 years ago, frankly, are still being implemented today. And I would say that's not just something that the insurance industry is focusing on, but also many other sectors, right? I mean, we're talking about funding and investment in various branches of NOAA or other parts of the federal government that deal with forecasting or dealing with event response, whether that's FEMA, whether there's all these other organizations or agencies that are collectively working to better assess the risk, better communicate the risk to the public. All of that information is very critical in terms of how it feeds back to our industry in particular. So the feedback loop is very real. And coming out of especially Katrina, there were numerous programs that were put into place around greater funding and investment for modernizing our hurricane forecasting capabilities and just broader weather forecasting models here in the U.S. And that has led to a shrinking of what we call the cone of uncertainty. So usually at a 3 or 5 day lead time, the National Hurricane Center will put out that, you know, that cone that everybody focuses on, and they try to see what the center line is and where the storm may actually go. But there has been a significant narrowing of that cone over the last 20 years. And we've done a better job additionally in terms of identifying when storms may be undergoing more rapid intensification changes. So that has been very helpful in terms of the industry having some additional lead time to be able to get assessors on the ground in areas where landfall is expected, and not just at the immediate coastline, but an event, say, like Hurricane Helene in 2024. You know, days in advance, there is an understanding that there is going to be a much greater inland flood risk. And so, you know, that preparedness is certainly very important. In terms of insurers and how they are looking at policies, you know, in the claims performance in particular, I mean, it really was a game changer for the industry in terms of how they are looking to, say, define contractual terms, being a bit more explicit in terms of identifying what is going to be covered from a claim and what isn't. I mean, Katrina was sort of the poster child in terms of really forcing companies to have to better define, is damage caused by wind or is it caused by water? And if it's caused first by wind and then water, is that going to be covered? You know, that really caused a reassessment in terms of what the language looks like, because as we all know, most flood-related damage requires a separate policy outside of a traditional homeowner's insurance policy. You have to go typically through the federal government, the National Flood Insurance Program. Though we have seen the introduction of more private insurance market options for flood too. And I think the last piece, and I could go on about the 20th anniversary for a long time, but I mean, the last piece that I think the industry has really taken a big step forward on is really promoting and pushing better mitigation, working with agencies like the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. That's an insurance-funded sort of engineering firm that conducts a lot of various tests for tropical cyclone wind, wildfire, hail, water-driven flood implications, and really allows consumers to see the types of construction materials, whether it's for roof or for siding, to know what's going to better withstand these types of impacts from various natural hazards. So that investment from the industry, and then putting that material out there in the public for folks to see how these various materials are rated, and then potentially get premium reductions because people are making that investment in their properties. It's a big step, and a lot of these changes can directly be attributed to the lessons learned over the last 20 years.
Customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
Steve, despite elevated losses, Gallagher Re reports rate reductions in property lines. What's driving this apparent market resilience, and could we see a shift?
Yeah, it's a good question. So what we've really seen in the last year or two, possibly, probably two last two, 3 years, has been a real massive influx of new reinsurance capital into the market. And at the end of 2024, Gallagher Re estimates that there is $769 billion of reinsurance capital available in the market, which is, again, it's a record. And so the industry really is in a very healthy spot at this point. And, given that reinsurers over the last few years has really taken a different view in terms of the areas and the types of perils that they are comfortable being involved with. And what has led to is more impacts for the primary carrier, especially when it comes to more of these high frequency events like severe convective storms. And the U.S. is, I think everyone is aware of, the record levels of thunderstorm related losses that we've seen, especially in 2023 and 2024. And we're off to another active start in 2025, but below the pace of the previous 2 years. But the primary carriers, as I said, they have taken on the bulk of those losses because reinsurers have taken a step back from offering products, say, around aggregate covers, which have long been a very popular product that insurance companies have been heavily reliant on. And because of steps like that, what we've seen is the reinsurers have had a very healthy run of profitability and health. And that, of course, has combined with fewer losses internationally outside the U.S., and that has really allowed the industry to really grow in its health. But because of that, I think we are starting to see a bit of an appetite come back for reinsurers to perhaps reintroduce some of these aggregate covers and other types of more sophisticated types of products that can allow them to deploy more of their capital. So it's sort of a wait and see, and especially as we get into the peak of the Atlantic hurricane season, all eyes are there, because obviously if we see a very significant event, that can certainly change the trajectory, in terms of rates pretty quickly.
Steve, how are insurers planning for the new reality of frequent $100 billion plus loss years? And what role does innovation play in staying ahead of escalating climate risks?
It's huge. And I will say just personally that, I'm a prime example of how the industry continues to evolve, right? I mean, I'm a meteorologist. I'm sitting in a chief science officer role within the insurance industry. And, 20 years ago, people probably would have questioned why. Like, why is insurance hiring all of these scientists? But it makes complete sense. And there has been a significant investment across the industry in terms of hiring scientists directly in-house to work with underwriters to really, integrate research directly into our business models to get a better, ability to assess risk in different types of regions. And as we've seen technology grow and the granularity of output from catastrophe models or global circulation models, we call them GCMs or global climate models, or any other type of material that's coming, say, from the academic space, and being able to have people internally to, I like to use the phrase Fisher pricing the science, which is a way to say to take really complex stuff and be able to interpret it down for the layman to understand and be able to interpret. And that sounds funny, but it's a really important thing, right? I will say as a scientist that many times scientists are not necessarily the best communicators. And so, being able to have people that can do that translation and make sure that it does get applied into, how we are viewing and assessing and underwriting risk in some of these increasingly high risk areas, that's very valuable. And that's analytics and investment and brain power that the industry really sees the value in and wants to continue to invest in. So, I think collectively all of that is really important. Plus, we're seeing more blurred lines between the private sector and working with academic institutions, having these third party collaborators to give an outside perspective. It's very important to always have a multi-model approach or a multi-view approach, like we like to call it an ensemble approach, essentially. Because if you're trying to make a decision based on a singular model, that oftentimes does not work out for the best, mostly because you need to have that different perspective and see where slight differences could actually make a pretty significant impact in terms of your portfolio. So it's an exciting time to be a scientist in our industry.
Steve, as we move into the peak months of the Atlantic hurricane season, what steps are insurers and reinsurers now taking to prepare for the potential of a major event that could further strain 2025 catastrophe budgets?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously the fires in California, they started the year off, you know, eroding a notable portion of catastrophe budgets. But since then, you know, largely things have been, you know, relatively manageable. And when I say that, obviously we're saying that from a financial standpoint, we have to be very, you know, cautious about how we talk about these things, because for folks that are being affected, I mean, the recovery period from a physical standpoint, but then also the emotional standpoint, it's something that lasts for a long time. So when I say manageable, it's financial for the industry and certainly not minimizing the impacts that folks are dealing with. But, you know, even though the budgets have been eroded a bit because of the activity to date, you know, we really have started to land around this concept that it would really require probably a $75 to at least $100 billion singular event to really, reset the market in terms of rates and broader discussions around whether we're going to shift the pendulum back towards a firming market, because we certainly are in a bit of a soft environment right now. So as I've referenced before, the industry is sitting on a record amounts of capital, around $769 billion. That's very, very healthy. It's never been higher. So I think that just from that standpoint, the industry is certainly feeling pretty protected. But, you know, again, we're also looking at not just the hazard risk, but also trying to dig a bit deeper into the broader socioeconomic or macroeconomic factors around, say, supply chain concerns. There's obviously the discussions ongoing around tariffs and what potential implications could be there, how that could lead to potentially greater replacement cost values. Also individual markets, right? I mean, we certainly have seen with Florida in recent years around litigation and third-party assignment of benefits challenges, which the state has actually done a really, really good job in stabilizing that market. And we're starting to see some of that in California too. But these are other sort of ancillary complementary factors that we have to be paying attention to if we do get a bigger event that could add additional costs. But overall, the industry is in good health as we go into the peak season. So, you know, fingers crossed that the season doesn't turn out as active as it might be.
Steve, this has been so fascinating, so insightful, and it's been a pleasure. And I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Always appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
That was Gallagher Re's Chief Science Officer, Steve Bowen. And for AM Best Audio, I'm Lori Chortis.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.